I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome back to Radio Times. Pennsylvania is losing a tireless child advocate. Shelley Yanoff is stepping down as executive director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth after heading the organization for 25 years. Over the last quarter of a century, she has worked to improve the lives of the state's youngest residents by focusing on health, welfare, and education. A lot has changed since 1987, and there are many challenges that still remain. Children have been hit hard by the recession and the slow economic recovery. Their poverty rate is on the rise. And the Corbett administration has cut funding for public education and made changes in the social safety net. Well, we've asked Shelley Yanoff to join us today on Radio Times. It's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Was that a tough decision for you to retire, to decide to retire?
It was, but it seems it's a good time to do it after 25 years. I want the organization to continue and to be vibrant, and we're in the middle of doing strategic planning, and seemed like a good time. But it's sort of like giving up your baby a little bit.
Especially being there for all those years. Is there something of which you are most proud as you look back over your 25 years?
You know, every year there are some victories and some indicators that you have to keep fighting. I was really happy that we were instrumental in getting CHIP passed in the state.
The Child Health Insurance Program.
Yeah, and that, you know, almost a million kids now in Pennsylvania get health insurance through Medicaid or CHIP, and we were instrumental in a lot of that. Nothing is only one individual or one organization, but we were part of the movement, and I'm really proud of that. I'm proud that we have full-day kindergarten. I'm proud that we have a really positive child care early childhood program that is quality-based, that's moving. Of course, now we're all struggling for dollars to keep it up. Mm-hmm. I'm proud that we finally, for a couple years, started to repair the state and city education formula. Now, of course, it's back to the drawing boards again. I think, Marty, in so many ways, I think the systems are so much better than they were 25 years ago, but kids are poorer, and that's really hard. So I'm proud that a lot of people have stood up and said, it matters, you know, and whether it's to keep the libraries open or staff the recreation centers or just push and insist that, yeah, every kid should have a shot at a good school and good child care, and nobody should be disallowed from getting health care. I mean, those are just huge pieces. But also those administrative pieces that, you know, the child welfare system. We wish we didn't need one. And some countries really seem to be doing pretty well without it. But we need one, and it's much better. But underlying all that is, why aren't we doing better by our kids general piece?
And I want to pick up on all of that, but I'm also interested in how you got interested in child welfare. I know you're a lawyer, and you also have been involved in some local politics here, including some of you and others wanting to recall then-Mayor Frank Rizzo. This probably dates you, but nonetheless, what was your interest in politics at the time?
Actually, the Rizzo recall story was an interesting one. There were a group of people who were interested in recalling him, and right after he was elected, and I didn't have an interest in that. And then my husband and I were driving to the theater one day, and we saw that the Inquirer was being surrounded and really held hostage because there had been a negative column about Frank Rizzo, and that really scared me. And I thought, wow, you know, it's not that he directed it, but we all have positive and negative sides of our behavior, and he kind of was felt to stimulate that negative piece. And so that really was why I got involved, and I'd always been involved in progressive politics.
And there was some pushback, I guess, for your involvement, and I mean, calling for recall, right?
Right. And we got 280,000 people signed it. That was pretty amazing. Yeah. And the pushback was, you know, some people, again, not, I don't believe ever in direction, but people wanting to protect him and do something to people who were not being supportive of
you're
him.
You're being very careful in your language here.
Well, you know.
Threats, right?
Yeah, we had, no, we there were definitely threats. I'm just, I don't believe that Frank Rizzo told somebody to threaten me, is what, and I have no reason to believe that. But I do think that sometimes tempers get too hot and people get really, they take action that's kind of bad. Where that is very bad. So that was the story of that. But I had been, I mean, my first entry into this whole cause piece was to try to save Get Set, which was the Head Start program.
Indeed.
And it just seemed impossible to me that the federal government was saying we're not going to have it anymore. And it was the year-round Head Start program. And so we, a bunch of us, sort of stood on corners and collected dollars to save Get Set. And one day I was shopping and I got a call, and the Washington, the Attorney General, wanted to see us. What? Well, it ended up we saved Head Start, or saved Get Set, which became, and it was really bad, Marty, because I thought, wow, you can do something and win.
And get a call from the Attorney General.
And that was a long time ago. Yeah. And so, but it was, it said, you know, we don't have to just sit and watch things go wrong. We have an obligation to try to make it better, and sometimes you win and sometimes you don't. And I think of all things, kids, you know, working on behalf of kids, what could be better?
Well, it's interesting. I was reading some articles about you, and many described you as an optimist. And you have been in the trenches dealing with child welfare issues. But also talk about the fact that your I guess, willingness to listen to the other side and what it takes to negotiate and to come to some kind of compromise when it comes to an issue. Would you say that that's something you're good at?
Well, I try to be.
Other people seem to think you are.
I try to be. I mean, I think that I don't have much patience with people who say it's none of their business what happens to other people's children or that. But once we get over that hump, I like to think that it's possible to form a position and to get something through that otherwise you couldn't. And that no... To me, the thing that I've really learned over the years is that no decision is perfect and nothing stays. You know, Head Start's threatened every other year. Our schools win and lose. Our child care system, it gets 4 awards and then it's underfunded. So, I mean, and then food stamps of all things sometimes are
the means
at total risk. The means testing and what? Why would we do that? It only hurts us, and it's more expensive. So, I mean, some of the things that we can see are bad. If you can sit down and say, "Why would you do that? Can't we figure it out?" You know. So.
But are you an optimist? I mean, do you think?
Yeah.
I wasn't accusing you of anything. It's not a bad thing to
be. I think if you're if you work on engaging people to make a difference, that you got to believe you can make a difference. And I think that might be another definition of optimism.
Indeed, indeed. Shelley Yanoff, our guest today on Radio Times, announced recently that she is stepping down as Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. It's an organization she has headed for the last 25 years, since 1987. And she joins us to reflect on some of the, I guess, wins and losses over those years, and certainly the challenges that lie ahead. And lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any questions or comments for our guests, do give us a call. I know another issue that that you cared and probably still care deeply about are homeless children. We talk about homeless children now, but probably, you know, 2 decades ago,
right. We
didn't know they existed.
That's right. That was the first project I undertook when I went to PCCY, because at that time, when you thought of homeless people, you thought of older people with addiction issues. And yet, there were lots of families that were on the street. And we started, that was a very fun project, because we started trying to figure out, okay, where are these families from? How can we get their kids into schools? What were the systems that were blocking them? You know, you couldn't register and go to a school if you didn't have your birth certificate. If you're a homeless person, if you're a homeless mother, you do not walk around with your birth certificate. How do you make sure that the school buses go to the shelters? How do you develop the shelters so that they are responsive? We did a little sleuthing. At that time, we would arrive at homeless shelters at 6:30 and wait and watch and see what they were serving for breakfast. And because we did, we saw some breakfasts that definitely would not pass anybody's test. And they also were served too late for the kids to get to school. So there were lots of systems that we could change. And we went to the city, and we went to the school district, and we went to the health department, and we went to the state. And little by little, the systems responded. And I think that it is true that it is a disgrace that we have homeless children, but we do. And so we need to do better by them. And right now, I think that children who are homeless many of them have child care. Many of them have their health immunizations are up to date. I think that it's not a perfect world. But if perfection is the goal, we're not going to get there. But if inching incrementally along is a goal, it's a worthy one, and all of us ought to do it. I had a funny story on that, though.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just one sec. It's that we started getting people from wealthier communities in the region to come in and read to kids in the shelter. And somebody accused me, and we got a large number of books and libraries. And somebody said, you know, if you're interested in dealing with homeless children, then build houses. Don't make the shelters nicer. And I thought, well, you got a point, but it's not my point today.
One thing at a time. We're almost up in a break here, but it's interesting you talk about making the systems work to help children. But was there a particular incident that got you interested in homeless children? Was there something you read or someone you met?
All of a sudden, walking the streets and looking at the number of kids and then wondering where they were. And it was really just kind of looking around and then seeing how so many systems really impacted on those kids, and they were doing it in isolation instead of like, how do we deal with this? So, and New York City was doing it too. When I first got to PCCY, I went to New York Citizens Committee for Children, which was founded by Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And what they were working on was homeless children.
Interesting. Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, talking with Shelley Yanoff today on Radio Time, stepping down as Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. And again, she has headed this organization for 25 years, working to improve the lives of the youngest residents of Pennsylvania, focusing on health, welfare, and education. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. This new hospital is now open. It was designed with all single patient rooms and innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a rapid response emergency room and physicians from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Now open. More at PrincetonHCS.org.
Politics, family, finance, faith. Too often the conversations are limited to who we know. But in our fast-paced world, it's important to know the new faces at the table and the new ideas that could shape our lives. Whether it's immigration, politics, or parenting, we offer real conversation about real issues. Join us as we explore what's beyond the headlines on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Philadelphia Theater Company supports WHYY and welcomes Reasons to Be Pretty from playwright Neil LaBute, writer of In the Company of Men and The Shape of Things, a hopelessly romantic comedy about the hopelessness of romance. Reasons to Be Pretty looks at America's beauty obsession through the eyes of two young couples with razor-sharp wit and unexpected insight. Reasons to be Pretty, May 25th through June 24th at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. Tickets 215-985-0420 or philadelphiatheatercompany.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Shelley Yanoff. We're looking back over her 25 years as Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. She has been a fierce and tireless advocate in Pennsylvania for the state's youngest citizens, and she is stepping down after 25 years on the job and in the trenches, although she told me before we began our conversation, those trenches have changed in the last quarter century, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get, looks like Allie from South Philadelphia to join our conversation. Allie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hi, Shelley. I've had the chance to work with you over the past 10 years or so, and what I wanted to ask you, I always feel like you're someone who's clearly not willing to negotiate away what kids need and just really stand on principle. At the same time, it seems to me like you're not someone who is viewed as an extremist in kind of local politics. And I think that's a really hard balance to strike. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you were able to do that. And I'm going to take my answer off the air because
I think I hear a baby there.
Yeah, I'm feeding a baby, one of our youngest citizens that I'm proud is coming of age in a city that Shelley helped shape.
Oh, that's really nice, Allie. And I like the way you put the question about your principles, but not an extremist.
Well, thanks, Allie. And I hope that's true. I think that we have to figure out ways to win. And I think that that means that you don't say, I'm not going to negotiate. There were a good example of that is years ago when the football teams wanted a new stadium. Right. And I thought public money should not be spent and on it, and there were lots of my colleagues and friends who, and similar organizations who were opposing it. And we went to city council and saw there was no way we were going to stop it. So I thought, well, how do we make it work for kids? So it wasn't the best. I would have preferred maybe another way, but we, and that was with Councilwoman Blondell Reynolds Brown.
Sure.
And James Brown, and we negotiated with then Mayor Street that he would require in any contribution building of the fields that there will be a major contribution to children's fund, and they created the Philadelphia Fund for Children, and is $1 million a year from each of the teams for 20 years. So
about $60 million.
So that was a win.
Right.
And so I think that I use that not as a model necessarily, but as a way to say, to answer Allie, maybe that we've got to find a lot of different ways to get to yes, and they are out there. We just have to figure it out.
I thought it was interesting, and Allie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I thought it was interesting, too, that you were concerned, can probably continue to be concerned about the lead paint problem, had a slogan, get the lead out. But
mm-hmm.
But seeing how lead paint could affect the health, you know, the learning power of children eating and being surrounded by lead paint.
Right. I was sitting in city council one day, and a nurse from Jefferson Hospital was talking, testifying about how she ran a clinic for kids who'd been lead exposed, and I thought lead had been taken care of a gazillion years ago, and it just opened the door to discover how lead really hurts us. And there had been recent studies that had shown that lots of people in jail had been lead damaged, and once you're lead damaged, it's really hard to overcome it. So it can be permanently really debilitating neurologically. You can't think as well as you should have, etc. And so it seemed impossible that we weren't doing something about it. And it's a really slow process, but we were able to make Philadelphia from one of the worst to the most improved city for a while, and that required city and federal dollars. And still like to get Frankly, I'd like to get a tax on paint. Not much, 50 cents on a gallon. We could really do a lot getting rid of lead, but we haven't found receptive ears on that one yet.
Well, it's interesting, even looking back over 25 years, as you said, highs and lows, the economy of the last couple of years, the recession, and now this, you know, very sort of back and forth, I won't even call quite a recovery yet, because I think there's still too many people that are struggling and great deal of insecurity. But it seems that children have been hit so hard, obviously because of their parents, but hit hard by this recession.
Well, they've been hit hard because their parents have lost their jobs and their parents don't have enough. But they also have been hit hard because their needs have expanded and there's less public dollars. And that's whether it's education or preschool or after school. And, you know, we always seem to find money to put into penitentiaries and to spend three times what you'd spend for a good education, but we don't seem to...
Like $30,000.
Yes, right, yeah. We don't seem to get to that spot. And it seems to me that it's amazing that we think, that we say education is important and go get an education. And then the kids that need the help the most, you know, have to struggle the most. And the people who teach them and counsel them have to struggle the most. And, you know, it's a little crazy. My daughter lives in Stockholm.
In Sweden.
When the most sought after college graduates are teachers. I mean, that is the job, the most respected. I mean, it's totally respected. And it says something about the world when we're into blaming instead of supporting. And it seems to me we ought to do better than that. I believe this country can do better than that.
I was thinking about your phrase, other people's children. You know, there's other people's money. There are a number of sort of similar sounding, although very different, obviously, but this notion of other people's children. And I think we're a highly individualistic country. And do you think there's enough understanding of what happens to other people's children? Because, you know, in when all is said and done, we're all in this together, even if we don't know each other particularly well.
Right. Well, I would say that Social Security happened. And Social Security is the nation saying, it is important to me that we as a whole take care of me and others, right, or else I won't be taken care of.
Our older citizens, obviously.
But it's not, it's for everybody. It's the commitment we make from one generation to another. So why aren't we making that commitment to all children? Because your children that you don't want to pay taxes to support their early childhood or their health care or their schools, the people that are not getting supported are not going to be helpful to your children. They're not going to build the world that you want your children to live in. So for selfish as well as non-selfish reasons, we ought to be doing better.
And that's Shelley Yanoff, our guest today on Radio Times. She has been a fierce, tireless advocate in Pennsylvania as Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth, a job she began 25 years ago in 1987, announced that she is stepping down, although it's not clear when she'll actually leave the job.
And I'm a slow leader.
And that's okay. and clearly still very passionate about the issues related to children in Pennsylvania and across the country. We're also taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get to, looks like Renee from Levittown to join us. Renee, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Even though you're ostensibly retiring, a person such as yourself never truly retires. And I was just wondering what your next project is in your head, if not actually on paper.
And Renee, she just rolled her eyes, just so you know. Go ahead,
Renee. I certainly don't think I'm retiring in that way, because I don't know what I'd do with myself. I do think I will always advocate, and I will always be advocating with PCCY as well as an individual. But I think it was time for me to move into a new piece, whether it's whether it's officially writing or teaching, I don't know, but but I hope to play a role in getting more and more people to recognize that it's their kids, that everybody's kids are their kids, and that we can make a better world, and that nothing stays done, so we have to keep doing it.
Renee, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Tony from Radnor has to say. And Tony, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I wonder whether or not you would comment a little bit more. You spoke about the impact of education versus jails. Yes. But I wonder if you would take it a little further in terms of what you see as the future of these young people who are not going to be educated, who are having funds cut back. And are they being prepped to fill those jails? And also, how do we compete on a global world if our children are being less and less educated? If I'm not phrasing that right, but having money expended toward their education.
No, I hear you. We should just say that $1 billion was cut from public education last year.
Yes.
The legislature, the governor, is still negotiating on a whole host of issues. But go ahead, Shilianoff.
Well, I think, first of all, I think you ought to join us and advocate with us, because definitely we agree with each other. I don't think that anybody stands up and says, I'm going to make a whole 10,000 more inmates. But that is the consequence of a lot of decisions they make when they decide that somebody else's children are somebody else's children and not theirs to worry about. So I totally agree with you. You could say, in fact, that increasing the money for jails and decreasing the money for education is wise, because you'll need more jails if you don't educate anybody. But I don't think that's a good idea to think that. But I think that we've got to say, wait a minute, this is our country. This is our city. This is our state. This is our community. What can we do? And we all can do something. Call your state legislator. Call your state senator, call your town leader, call your city council person and say, no, take that step. I'll back you. I will have your back if you support increased funding for those things that are important to kids.
Tony, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Last summer, about 89,000 children in Pennsylvania removed from medical assistance roles. They're slowly being, not all of them clearly, but some have been returned to those roles. But nonetheless, what was the impact of that decision?
Well, what happened there was a perfect storm. You decide that we don't need to replace any state workers that are processing those forms. We don't need to notify people that they need to come in and get recertified. And we have to be efficient. If you haven't applied by X, then it's over. Well, you can't play it that way. Yeah. And so many of us don't check every month about whether our health insurance is still good. When it's time for us to go to the doctor, we take ourselves and we take our children to the doctor. So it is so terrible for these families to all of a sudden discover they don't have health insurance. And we at PCCY, we have a helpline, and we got those calls from frantic parents saying, my child has a strep throat. I'm worried. I don't know where. I went to the doctor. I'm not covered anymore. What am I going to do? And it's not being corrected near quickly enough. And, we don't have to say you're a bad person. Just correct it. Just recognize that if you don't have enough people to process things, you're not going to be able to do what you need to do. And so it might be fine to say you'll save money, but you're actually increasing expenses and you're really, really hurting lives. So that was a bad, bad decision, which has not been corrected adequately at all.
Let me get, looks like Allison from Fairless Hills to join us. And Allison, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And Shelley, I just want to say that the work you do is so admirable. helpful. And most of all, I love your attitude towards children's rights. I think it's incredible. But I hear a lot of talk about money and funding for programs, which is fantastic. But I was also wondering, too, about just getting children's attitudes towards education to turn around. My husband's a teacher in West Philadelphia, and it saddens me when he comes home and talks about how these children, they don't want to learn. They don't care, and that's what they're learning from their families and their communities. Are there any programs that your organization sponsors or develops to help these kids get interested in their futures?
It's a good question, Allison. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead, Shelley.
It's a hard question.
It is a hard question.
In some ways, we are going through a time when too often people talk about money only. And when they do that, if you live in an area that doesn't have money, it's very hard to make the connection. So it's the culture that we are creating that contributes strongly to the problem that your husband's describing. Mm-hmm. So my answer to that is, how do we change the culture? How do we get mentors? How do we get lots of kids don't have parents that have time or to work with them, but there are a lot of opportunities. There's Boys and Girls Clubs, there's mentors. The United Way has a whole host of mentors. There's Mayor Nutter has a program in which volunteers go in and help kids fill out college application forms or school application forms because there's nobody in their family that can do that. We definitely need to create the kind of culture that says all of our kids matter, and we haven't done that. And I think what your husband is experiencing is the fallout from an attitude that says, I only take care of mine. Mm. And I think we can't do that.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, but as you said, you're kind of waiting to see how PCCY will look and to deal with some of the issues, I guess, going mm-hmm. forward. Mm-hmm. How will you know when you're done? not the next chapter of your life, but this
with
one.
With PCCY?
Yes.
Well, I mean, we're doing strategic planning. We're looking at what are we going to look like and be focusing on in the next 3 to 5 years, and will we be underscoring our regionalism? I think we will be, and we'll always be working on those things that are most important to children. And of course, it's hard to separate out children from families,
yes.
And so we'll always be involved in that, but how that involvement expresses itself will be different.
And what will you miss the most?
I will miss working with people who care and who are willing to think about something without being scared to say it. So I think, you know, in too many workplaces, people are not creative, and that's discouraged. I think we all can do better, and the music is playing. So I think I'd like to say that we all have music to play for kids.
Indeed we do. And Shelley Yanoff, thanks for all that you have done and will clearly continue to do, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure to have you on. And Joseph Carruth, waiting in the wings, talking with two people today involved in the lives of young people. We'll be right back.
Penn's College of Liberal and Professional Studies supports WHYY. Penn's Master of Liberal Arts allows students to tailor their program to suit their interests in the humanities and the natural and social sciences. Instructors and peers share perspectives that can help students hone their thinking, synthesize information from multiple disciplines, and communicate their ideas. Part-time options and evening classes are designed to fit the needs of working professionals. Details on how to pursue your passion at Penn by searching Penn MLA.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Amazon plans to open an office in Massachusetts. That means jobs, but the state is now saying, hey, shouldn't your customers now pay state taxes? Also, have you seen the YouTube videos preaching hate of homosexuals? Pastors calling for them to be killed or fenced off? We'll take a look. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The rate of new HIV infection in Philadelphia is 5 times the national average. There are more than 30,000 living with the virus in our city, and 1 in 5 don't know it. June is AIDS Education Month, and Philadelphia Fight is holding events throughout June for youth, faith leaders, medical providers, and the greater community, including National HIV Testing Day on June 27th. All events are open to the public. More about AIDS Education Month at fight.org/AEM. Philadelphia Fight supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Joseph Carruth was the principal of Brim Medical Arts High School in Camden when he was fired in 2006. School officials said it was because of poor job performance, but Carruth charged that he was pressured to change test scores at his school, and he filed a whistleblower lawsuit against the district. He won that lawsuit, received a settlement of $860,000. The Camden School District was told to reinstate him, and he'll be back at work when the new academic year starts in September. We spoke with Joseph Carruth after he was fired and asked him to join us today. And Joe, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Do you feel vindicated?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And what was, I mean, I'm thinking about the last 6 years of your life. What, to summarize that, what has that been like for you?
It was tough. The rejection of not being able to get another job. The life change of being home all the time with my wife and the strain on the marriage. And then ultimately just hitting rock bottom. You know, I just felt like everything was against me. I couldn't find work. It was just tough. And ultimately kind of reaching out like, why is this happening to me? I feel like I did nothing wrong, and then this is going on, and then hitting rock bottom, and then just calling out to God.
Well,
and that's really when my life changed.
I understand, and also I'm assuming your life changed to some degree after winning this lawsuit.
Well, it has, because now I can go back to work, and I can do what I felt I was meant to do, which is advocate for students. And be a principal.
Do you know what you'll be doing when you go back to Camden?
I will be a principal, but as far as my actual job assignment with school, that's to be determined.
And during those 6 years after you were fired, and I do want to talk about what you certainly alleged had happened when you were principal in Camden, was that, I mean, did you, in a sense, have a cloud over you because of what had happened in Camden when you were applying for other jobs?
I felt like I did. I had even had an interview where I was a superintendent of a charter school who had said, you know, I'm really thinking about bringing you in because I need you to get our test scores up. And I said, well, you realize that I didn't cheat. And she said, okay. And that kind of ended the interview. So looking back, I was like, wow, I probably would have had a better chance of getting another job if I had cheated than by not cheating.
Well, let's go back to the time when you were principal at Brim Medical Arts High School. This was in Camden. It's a magnet school.
Yes.
And what were you told to do?
I was told to that the scores had always been well done. The students had always done well with the scores. They've always passed. And it was my job to make sure that they continue to do well and pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, we're doing what we're doing. You know, we're even having a Saturday program where students can come in for extra help. And then it was explained to me, no, the way that you make sure is that you take the test, the math test. You review the students' answers, and you make sure that they have a majority of the tests correct.
And who told you to do that?
My immediate supervisor, the assistant superintendent, Mr. Pagan.
And what was your response when he told you to do that?
I didn't respond. I was kind of shocked at the time, and he never asked if I was going to do it or not. He just kind of, at that point, led me out the office.
And what happened after that?
Well, I felt sick, a little nauseous, and I was going down the elevator, and I felt like my head was spinning. And I made the decision at that point that, you know, I can't do this.
And had anyone ever in your time as a teacher or even as a principal, had anyone ever asked you to change test scores the way you said you were being asked to change them?
Yes, as a teacher, I had an incident also.
Same kind of thing?
Same kind of thing, changing answers after the students had taken the test.
And you were fired for what?
Well, Initially, the letter I got said conduct on becoming a board employee. And the second letter said conduct on becoming the principal of Brim Medical Arts High School. And so was the conduct the fact that I didn't follow orders, or was the conduct the fact that, you know, I wasn't going to cheat?
And the language was conduct unbecoming?
Yes.
Without any kind of description?
Well, the first, it was actually four letters in total. The first two letters read conduct unbecoming, actually the first three letters. And the final letter was a rather lengthy letter that was that had things in it from a prior evaluation that was done after everything came to light.
And why did you decide to file a whistleblower lawsuit?
I felt it was obvious that the reason I was fired was because I refused to cheat.
Now, there was an investigation. State officials did conclude that there was, quote-unquote, adult interference in to help the increase some of these test scores. Did that in any way mitigate what you had done?
I thought it did. I thought that it made clear that the scores weren't natural, that somebody or people had done things to manipulate them.
The report also said that, or was actually inconclusive about your allegations that Pagan had told you to change these test scores.
Yeah, I thought that was disheartening. But in talking to my attorney about it, I mean, it's his word against mine. Mm-hmm. So how can somebody impartial really say who was right and who was wrong? So he kind of explained that to me.
So do you think winning the lawsuit then sort of challenges the conclusions of that report in 2006?
I think it does. I think it definitely lets people know that not just at Brent but other schools in the city, somebody had manipulated things.
And that's Joseph Carruth. He was the principal of Brim Medical Arts School, Arts High School in Camden, was fired back in 2006, as he has been describing for us, said he was pressured to change test scores. He filed a whistleblower lawsuit against the district. He won that lawsuit, and come September, he will be back in Camden schools. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Why? Will it be? I mean, it's been 6 years, but will it be strange, Joe, at all, just going back to that school district after all that's happened in the last 6 years?
I wouldn't say strange. It's actually exciting because I think that Camden is at a point now where they need caring adults to come in and really change things for the better. And I would like to think that I am one of those caring adults that will come in and help change things for the better.
And how will you do that?
Well, as principal, I make decisions that are geared to what's best for the students that I serve.
And Camden, of course, it's a poor city, and about 16,000 public school students?
Yes.
And do you think you'll be back at Brim?
I don't know. At this point, all I was told was that the assignment will be determined, so I don't know.
You said, and clearly this was a hard couple of years for you, probably, and your family as well, unable to work. You talk about even pressure on your marriage. How were you able, you and your wife, able to survive this? And I know it was tough.
That's where the communication came in, just sitting down and starting to talk. Before this, I'd always heard that it would either... adversity either makes you stronger or it separates you. And it started to separate us, but as we started to come together and talk, and as we started to go to church and bring Christ into our life and our family life, that's really what started to change and make things better and make things more tolerable. She started to understand me better. I started to understand her better. Mm-hmm. And it's really turned our lives around in a positive way.
I was reading about you in one of the articles about your father helping you out. Can you talk about that?
Yes. With no income, you can't keep up with the bills. And my dad had sat me and my wife down, and he said, hey, you know, what's your monthly expenses? And we sat down, we discussed it, and he said, you know, I'll take care of them. Uh-huh. At the time, we felt that it was going to take about 18 months. So he said, I'll take care of it for 18 months. And then once the lawsuit's done, you know, you pay me back and you move forward with life. And then 18 months turned to 24. And then after 24 months, it was just, we don't know how long this is going to take. And, you know, he was candid. He said, look, I don't know how long I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so every month it was, you know, is Dad going to be able to help us this month? Is Dad going to be able to help us this month? And through it all, he was there, and we made it through.
Wow. And was he using retirement money or part of his own salary?
Retirement money, money right. that him and my mom had saved for their retirement.
So that $860,000, some of that will go back to your dad?
Yes.
Were there any points in this six-year period where you, because of the hardships and the inability to find work, where you regretted that you had done what you had done?
I didn't regret doing what I had done, but I had regretted going back to Camden and thought how my life may have been different if I had not gone back.
And you had taught there for a while, right?
Yes. And I taught in Camden for 6 years, and then I left for 5 years, mm-hmm. and I was an administrator in two nearby suburban areas. And when I saw that the job at Brim was available, I had applied, and I thought that would be a great job. And so I went back to the city. So my regret was, well, maybe I shouldn't have gone back, mm-hmm. not that I refused to cheat.
And what do you like about, or apparently love about being a school principal?
Well, you're in a position where you can really make positive change for students. And you can really help make a teacher's life easier. I had a great principal when I was a teacher, and she supported me, and it made me a stronger teacher. And I learned through those lessons that, you know what, if you support teachers, they can have the strength to do the right thing. Mm. And so it just really stuck with me. And she was really encouraging that, you know, I think you have some of the qualities that would make a good administrator. And so for someone I respected to see those positive things in me, it really made me think, okay, well, how do you become an administrator? How do you become a principal?
And have you gotten an apology? Do you feel like you're owed an apology from the district?
I haven't gotten an apology. And at this point, no. Initially, I was bitter because of the way things went down. And I would have felt like, oh, yeah, I need an apology. But that's where I've changed. And the people who did this are no longer employed there. Right. It's a whole different board of education. I would be serving different students. So it's just a matter of letting the past be the past and just move forward.
I wonder, and this is maybe a more philosophical question, but there's so much focus on test scores and even tying teachers' salaries to their students' test scores. Is that, you know, based on what you observed as a principal at Brim and obviously the pressure to get those scores up, do you think that's a good way or a healthy way for teachers to proceed and schools to proceed?
I don't. The only way I could see it being a healthy way would be if there was some kind of system in education we call it looping, where you would be with the class for a number of years. So maybe you would have that class in first grade, second grade, third grade, and fourth grade.
Oh, wow.
And so then you can monitor the progress as they move from first grade to second grade to third, and third to fourth. So it's directly reflective of what that teacher is doing with those students, because that teacher would have those students for 4 years. But just to have a class for 1 year come in, and the issue, especially in an urban setting, is if you're a fifth or sixth grade teacher and your students aren't on grade level, so let's say in this example, you're a sixth grade teacher, students on third grade level, and you're able to move that student up to fifth grade level, at the end of the year, you're still deemed a failure because that student isn't ready for seventh grade.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that you moved them up two grade levels. And so in a utopia society where everybody comes into the classroom on level, that could work. But when you have so many students, especially in an urban setting, who aren't on level, it just isn't fair. And then you have teachers who may not, well, I don't want this student because they're too far behind, and that's going to reflect on me. And then you have issues with self-esteem of students if it's ever found out that this teacher didn't want me, or maybe they're even treating you a little different because they didn't want you. I just think it's a bad deal.
So when do you start work in Camden?
July 1st.
July 1st. And do you know where you're going to report?
At this point, I don't know. I guess if I don't hear anything about a week out, I'll contact my attorney and say, hey, right. You know, contact the district and let me know where I'm supposed to go.
But you're promised a job as a principal?
Yes.
Nothing less than that? Or different from
Correct.
That?
Nothing different from that.
And how, as a principal, will you prepare for the new school year that starts in September? Are there certain things you do?
It would depend on the grade level, but there are different things that you do. If it's right now, what Camden's trying to do, they're moving back to K-8 situations, family schools. And actually, when I first started teaching in Camden, that was the school I taught in, at K-8. And so if I'm in a K-8 building, I would look at it, like I said, with the looping. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you can't do right away, but over that first year, I would try to get the staff on board about the benefits of maybe having a looping system. If it's a high school setting, then I would look at it as, okay, we have to address students coming into high school who aren't on level. And how was the best way of trying to address those students who aren't on level? And maybe introducing some type of basic skills class. We can call it maybe math facts for math, and some kind of reading class for people who aren't on par with their reading level. But address those skills as freshmen. And giving students the ability to test out if they are on level, but for the students who aren't, have them go through these basic skills classes so that we can catch those skills that they've lost or haven't attained, and move them through high school so they can go ahead and earn those diplomas, and they can go ahead and pass these state tests.
Well, Joseph Kruth, it's a great pleasure to have you back with us on Radio Times. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Joseph Kruth was a principal at the Brim Medical Arts High School in Camden, was fired. He won a lawsuit, and he's going back to work starting in July. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show was produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder, with assistance from Jonathan Best. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.